I would like to talk a little closer to the topic of the first talk today, rather than the second, and talk about homogeneous strain biology, and that would be the essence, and look at the electronic structure and then number levels for such a system. Now, the motivation, the motivation goes to suspended graphene samples, where, as you know, a piece of graphene is suspended over some ridge, to draw it simplistically. This part of the sample is suspended. Here, quite often, we have already sputtered metallic contacts on top, on this part. And, well, in samples like that, also using current annealing, the samples are actually quite high quality. And then, very interesting physics happens. But what I would like to look at is whether there's anything connected to deformations in a very simplistic model that I will briefly describe. Because this thing in between is obviously atomically thin membrane, bilayer graphene, two layers. And because of lots of literature for graphene and carbon nanotubes, we know that mechanical deformations couple in a very interesting way to electrons. So the question is whether, if we take the simplest of models, we can see something interesting. So first, I would like to start with monolayer. It's less atoms, so that will be easier to talk about. I define two sublattices, and I will choose crystalline axis like that. Now, what I'm interested in is stretching of right now single layer, and what is important is that when you look at your membrane and to stretch it, you obviously don't know how the hexagons are arranged. So let it be that there is second set of axes, and these are actually those macroscopic coordinates that I can relate to the strain. So I can think, I take a piece of a membrane, stretch it, I can then define directions along which I stretch or the contraction happens, and this is these are my membrane coordinates. Locally, even without inhomogeneous strain, we can look at what happens when one has some deformation field, which I will write in crystalline coordinates for a moment. Now, for monolayer graphene and the simplest time binding model, just write. I'm quite unusually write here diagonal term, which is usually set to zero. That will only shift as scale of energy, so it won't be very relevant. And here, and that is some. I numbers nearest neighbors, so I'm limiting the hopping to nearest neighbors. And obviously, one needs to sum. This is a very standard expression, which close to valleys, yeah. back up, where I take slide.
Oh. Okay. Is it now?
Where psi is just the valley index, so that's all very simple. Now, when I think about what happens to the lattice when it's distorted, and because of the homogeneous strain at the end, I will not concern myself with out-of-plane deformations, which were important in the first talk. What happens is that chemical environment of any of the atoms changes, because the distances between atoms change. So that may, in general form, shift the energy of the electron on the pi orbital, so the unsigned term in time binding. And so that's one effect. And the other is because the distances between atoms change. Obviously, when I take this expression, this will be no longer constant for all the neighbors I consider. And these phases will also contribute differently. Now, just to, I will already write, expression. This is the change of the diagonal term, which depends just on the if of deformation field, so just the elongation, local elongation. And now I put, because I put only a change of it, now I put epsilon 2 to epsilon pi energy of the orbital equal to 0. I only have the change. And this is just time binding description of how this local energy, on-site energy, changes when I vary the distance between neighbors. So this has been looked at in DFT, and I can just borrow values. If I remember correctly, this alone would be around 6 electron volts per angstrom. Then, and then, so the same term.
Could you repeat? So it is epsilon 2p and the other term is?
This is just RAB, which is the bond length.
Oh.
So this is expanded, yeah. So this is change of the energy times the bond length, equilibrium bond length, because so that's expanded around it, just divided by 2 and elongation. Now, what I want here, or what I get here, this way, is essentially something like that. I let myself put a subscript. And then conjugate goes here, where this can be put together as additional vector potential, so basically gauge potential coming with momentum. That is pretty peculiar for graphene. So it appears in a very similar form to magnetic vector potential. Important difference, okay, so I already have. So the important difference in comparison to magnetic vector potential is this xi here. Okay. So in terms of crystal, what happens is that as we deform the membrane, we deform the unit cell, locally at least. That means we deform the reciprocal space, and that means whatever we called the valley, its position changes, and in general that also means that the position of the Dirac cones change. So this is essentially the offset in momentum space that one has to take into account, because Dirac cones shift from the positions we're used to expect them in.
Excuse me. You're interested only in the electronic properties, right?
Yeah.
So for example, so here the diagonal term you can just...
Yeah. It's just that because I'm talking about what happens locally, and I have displacement field and all the derivatives, and I, for completeness, yeah, put it in. But
it may just be interesting also to notice that in this case, for example, what you're doing is you shift your Dirac points away from the corners of the first Brian zone, by this strain, if you want. And in this case, also the next nearest neighbor hopping is modified. So you haven't taken into account the next nearest neighbor hopping, because usually when they are located at the corners of the first Brian zone, they are just parabolic, given some parabolic M correction. But now, since you expand around a position that is somewhere else, it gives rise to a linear correction.
So you mean the term that is usually just here from
which was prime square term?
Yeah, two neighbors.
Yeah, it becomes a linear Huston term actually, because it's not at a high symmetry point anymore.
Yeah, that's true. There would be a term there. Now again, I will put this one. Definitely doesn't matter because it will be a constant and homogeneous term and homogeneous strain as well. This I just expect it to be much smaller than anything I will talk about later, because that will be...
tilts you the cones, it doesn't change the direct physics so much, but it tilts you the cones, and it's, well, yeah, it's
okay.
Still subleading,
okay.
It is, now you have really a linear term. The original argument was you could forget about it, mm-hmm, because it was parabolic, but now it becomes linear. This is, I think,
okay,
the important point here.
Yeah. That will be interesting. I don't think that will change any of the arguments I will make later, although at least for numeric purposes, it will be interesting to see what happens to in bilayer, because that's the main part.
There was also recently a paper that they see that actually that gauge field that you put there, it has a correction in every different k, which is of the same order, so it's different in every k point.
Well, I've seen papers which... So essentially, I think it is the matter of deciding which terms you keep, and I will keep terms that are essentially, when I talk about homogeneous strain, linear in strain. So you...
They are of the same order of the gauge A.
I don't think so, because I looked at it, and at least because in monolayer, of course, you can talk about big strains, and then you can think whether the shift is the only thing that happens. Of course not, but in bilayer graphene, as far as I remember, the form of those terms and the expansion, at least for small term, at least for small strains, that will be the biggest term. And in bilayer, the phenomena I will talk about in bilayer is essentially 1% strain will be already interesting energy scale to look at. So that is much less than in monolayer, where people were thinking about opening gaps of strain, but it turned out to be 10-20%, and then at the limit of breaking of the material, I think so. So I think because of the magnitude of the strain I need, that may actually keep only the terms I want. So now I switch to bilayer graphene. This is A2, B1, that's it on top. That will be A1, B2. Now I would like to introduce one more hopping. So I used gamma naught in the structure without any deformations. as the Hoppingen plane, so between V1 and A1. Now what I will need is, I will need direct interlayering hopping here. I'm not sure it will appear, but just to make sure it's one. And then this hopping here, which is interlayer hopping, the next relevant, and this one I call gamma 3. Okay, so it's essentially the same procedure I had here. I will write it in a very simple form once again. Sorry for that if it's extremely boring, but essentially zero all the other couplings, and now let me check where the dagger comes. Here and here. So now this would be all if I just thought that what I'm interested in, these are in layer interlayer blocks, and this is interlayer coupling gamma 1. So if I stop at this point, so I take two most relevant couplings, then this is all I get, exactly the same correction to each term in plane term because of three neighbors, and then I essentially get the shift of the shift of the neutrality point where two ones touch in the reciprocal space. So the only difference is that here I had cones shifting more or less. Here one would just expect the parabolic spectrum to shift so that bands don't no longer meet exactly at the corner of the Brillouin zone. Now it does change somewhat if I add now this is what I get if I take into account this coupling gamma 3. Now, because of the geometry, terms look very similar because it's essentially, it's still like an unperturbed system, it's just rotation by 180 if you think about this element and this one. So the mathematical form is exactly the same. But what is interesting is that if you now think about, okay, let us trace where the band touching point shifted in reciprocal space, which means I want to shift momentum to trace its position. Now this, if I shift it here, which is the corresponding shift in monolayer, then it momentum will shift very differently here. Now pi and pi dagger, just to I shortened the notation I had on the left board. This anything else relevant? Yeah.
Because perhaps the V is not the same, right?
Sorry, you're completely right. Because this, mathematically is the same form, but of course, different coupling.
Sorry, what's A3?
Yeah. Now, this has exactly the same form like this. It's just that instead of 0 here, it will have a 3 here. And this, sorry, I forgot to mention, this is the parameter that describes the change of the coupling with distance. So if I put 0 here, this will describe me a change, the change of coupling between nearest neighbors in the same plane as I stretch it. If I put 3 here, That will just describe me the change of gamma free with distance. And in the model, I assume that everything depends just, well, again, the simplest I could think, just on the distance between two. So there is nothing really about the environment in those of diagonal terms. Now, this at least is of the order of minus 3. So it's essentially, let me think, change of gamma naught with the change of the distance, and it's so it's like that.
So the strain is the same in both layers?
Yeah, so now I look at strain. So that is an important question. I stretch, so I essentially grab both of them at the exactly in the same fashion and stretch. Again, the simplest form you can think of, which also means that the positions of the dimer stay the same throughout the lattice. So all hexagons deform exactly in the same way, which guarantees that the mathematical form here is exactly the same, because I can draw hexagons for all the couplings, and that's why it comes this way. Yeah, and then exactly because of that, there is obviously no correction to interlayer coupling, because dimers stay together as I stretch. Okay, so now I need to just to make sure you're familiar with what happens if I forget about strain and look at bilayer graphene electronic structure. Everyone probably saw at some point parabolic spectrum. If I forget about gamma free, that's what I get. And then there are going to be two more bands, because obviously four solutions in this matrix. But I forget about them. They're high split from the neutrality point by gamma 1. So I draw just energies much smaller than this interlayer coupling. So the bottoms here are quasi-parabolic. But now I put this term. Let's forget about strain still. Now what happens is this term is linear. And because of the importance of the coupling, this term is much smaller than anything that comes from nearest neighbors in plane. But it is still linear, so one expects to see a cone. And actually what happens somewhere here at the scale of 1 electron volt, one believes, just time binding model that is that the parabolic spectrum, so circular in cross section, I'll draw it bigger, which would then vanish to a point when it touches exactly the other band, now splits for very small energies into four Dirac cones, and then let me try to be. Okay. So we start with Fermi line that is circular for big energies and look at cross section down. At some point, the shape is no longer circular. I see the symmetry. That's what's called trigonal warping. And then as I lower the energy, at some point, three pockets separate from the central part. And low, if I look lower or from the side, then each of those parts is actually a small Dirac cone. So there are actually four Dirac cones. Beriphase is still 2π because I have, these I think have pi, and this one has minus pi. So it still adds up to 2π. But what is important is exactly the energy scale. Now the point of what is called Lifshitz transition here. The energy of that taken out of pure time binding is about 1 electron volt. And this is the crucial difference between monolayer and bilayer. If I think now about what the simple model could change in monolayer, it was just shifting of the Dirac cones. But now there is a question whether shifting of Dirac cones in picture like that is going to give me something different, because the distances between those Dirac cones are much smaller than monolayer when I need to look to another valley, and also the energies involved, so hopefully strains needed to see anything are much smaller. Okay, so I take this Hamiltonian. I will do two more steps quickly. One is to shift the momentum coordinates such that this is as it was in Alcantara system, and then extract low energies. So what I want is a low energy model, which usually looks like that. So this is the usual parabolic spectrum, and this is the part that will split my spectrum into four Dirac cones. Now, because when I shift the momentum, there is going to be, from this momentum, something coming out that I cannot neglect. I get one more term, which right now I'll write like that. This contains all the information about strain. And now if I assume that it's exactly, I take homogeneous strain, like I said, I strain both layers exactly in the same fashion, dimers stay on each other, then I can introduce some microscopic strain. So I will introduce now. Here it will hopefully stay. This is the amount of strain in one direction that I choose. But I choose this in these coordinates. So there's going to be some angle. I don't know how I stretch the lattice. Now, this is going to be contraction in the perpendicular direction. One can put Poisson ratio if one really wants that. Then this will be dependence on the angle between what I called membrane coordinates and crystalline coordinates. So depending how I stretch it with respect to where atoms are, this is going to be different. Now, it has dependence on the change of both couplings I mentioned, and it has dependence on how strong I stretch, and essentially what is the Poisson ratio, because I could substitute it here for the material, and that would be the same. And everything is proportional to gamma free. So if I neglect the gamma free there in time binding, there will be nothing interesting coming out of this picture, because I no longer looked at low energies. I neglected one of the important terms, what happens to the spectrum. But what is interesting, now I have gamma free here. I have something which is proportional to gamma free here in the same, exactly same fashion like this proportional to gamma naught. But now this comes with momenta. So one could actually envision some scenario where the strain is so big that it's actually this and this term that are important rather than the middle one. And by big, I still mean so that the energy scale is just bigger than 1 electron volt. So that may not be great estimates in riffentide binding here.
Just a question. So eta here is just, so to say, the exponent of, so it's a dimensionless constant, as well as delta. Do you have some estimates? I mean, now for eta 3 with respect to eta naught.
So, okay, so this...
I mean, simply from a Harrison law, I would expect both to be the same, essentially.
Well, if you think that orbitals would decay in the same way, but then what you may want to think about is the way the overlap happens, which is here, or rather in plane, if I draw A1, B1, which is here, and the direction here, which is with the interlayer distance, which is much bigger than the distance between those atoms. So even if you take exponent, but actually look at the distance between atoms, then you're going to get much smaller change for in the exponent there.
But you're not aware of some ab initio calculations
so,
or something like
so,
that?
So this, like I mentioned, has been done with DFT, and there has been some comparison to Raman, where I believe it plays some role in some peaks. So the value, I gave is from some particular calculation. It varies. Some people say 2 or you know, but that's what we look up. Now this, as far as I understand, is very difficult to get from DFT, just because it's such a tiny effect that you know you have to make sure what you put in is proper, because and one of the arguments is exactly because system is going to be very weakly sensitive on how it changes with the positions of the atoms. So you may get, depending on the models in DFT, different values. So for that, I have no value, and the estimate I can make is that, you know, you just throw this one, and then you can say that for this 1%, this would be, I think it was 6. Milliarden volts. So even if you say 4, or you know, that it's definitely comparable to this. And if you think 1% may not be that much. So this is an effect that may be visible, especially if one looks exactly at the electronic spectrum of this Hamiltonian.
Now let's see. What is position dependent? So is it delta and theta?
So for homogeneous strain, this is no longer position dependent, because you say essentially every unit cell expands in exactly the same fashion.
I think like in the first talk of something which is not deformed asymptotically, but is only deformed over some trench, like what you assume.
So
it would be homogeneous, and then I think you are back in a situation when the second term would be the third term would be important at some positions and could be not important very far from the trench, right?
Yeah. So well, to talk about band structure in a simple fashion, I just needed position independent, and then something I did a little later was to think, well, not what you're saying, but essentially try to plug it into more viable model where the strain is actually homogeneous. But then, you know, electronic structure on point doesn't have much meaning. You would need to calculate conductance for something like that. So that's something still
going. I suspect the strain is getting over.
Okay.
That's one
Can
question.
We tell what are you actually going to achieve?
Electronic spectrum, that's fine.
Are you going to tell what the result is? Have you been advised how to prepare the presentation?
Yes, and I was informed of slides about you, which is not possible in the seminar room, but it's okay. It's okay. So I will manage. Okay. And I had, well, I think it's good that I have a student between them only at the end, so I'm fine with that.
It's a question of PhD advisors. How to prepare your students.
Okay, so electronic structure of this Hamiltonian.
Just
this. It's obviously unperturbed spectrum. So we know what happens. We have four Dirac cones.
And now I will.
Okay. I draw three possible regimes for the electronic structure. What happens if we wanted to increase W along this direction, so real part? What happens here, as we slowly increase, is that one of the Dirac cones shifts away from the other three, and those three close on each other. And exactly here, those three come together and merge. And anywhere here, I have only two Dirac cones in the spectrum. I have this one, which by that time ran away, and I have one Dirac cone which came to exist because three small Dirac cones annihilated each other. And then I have Berry Face still, okay, two Dirac cones, 2 pi. If I look at what happens along this direction, there is a point there. As I shift in the direction minus W, those two cones approach each other. Those, however, stay more or less away. Those two will merge, but will not create a cone. What they will create is a parabolic minimum, local minimum in the spectrum. Why local? Because in general, as I start shifting here, this minimum will no longer be touching the energy equal to zero plane. It will lift. So here, in those three parts, because by symmetry it's the same everywhere here, what I have are two Dirac cones and one local parabolic minimum. If I increase the W anywhere high enough, then I end just with two Dirac cones, which is essentially like saying that this term lost its relevance, so I have only this. Okay, time run out, or I can...
Finished.
Okay.
In view of your energy scales, what experiments would I want to do to see this?
The experiment that would probe it is to measure activation gaps in magnetic fields. So rather Landau levels, which is the part I didn't get to, which is exactly what Bologna meant that I'm late. Because if you think quickly about the most persistent filling factor in magnetic field, then if you have four Dirac cones, then you need to have the energy equal to zero Landau level, actually 16-fold degenerate rather than 8 if you have just parabolic spectrum like people usually do that. So of course the magnetic field is very, very small and you need to have a very good resolution. These are magnetic fields you look at. But then the filling factor important with the biggest activation gap in this regime is 8. Now this is very different if you are anywhere here where you have two Dirac cones, because you will not have 16-fold degenerate zero energy Landau level.
Another quick question. The shear modulus between the two rays is very small, at least in graphite. So it's likely that the strains are not the same in both layers.
Yeah.
You know what may happen in that case?
So if you shift one of the layers a little, then the way, because of the interlayer distance being much bigger, then at least if I look for the first term, then this will not have linear term. This will have term quadratic because of the square. For the distance when you shift it a little, it's no longer directly above. So you have square root of this and of the interlayer distance plus some tiny quantity to expand it. So at least in this fashion, with the terms I kept within strain, because then one can discuss other terms people derived properly. But at least within those terms, I would which is, well, I did neglect anything coming from interlayer coupling.
Isn't it the case that those low densities, your interactions will start bothering you?
Yeah, so that's of course another question, which is what I said at some points. If one believes the time binding picture of those energies, and that's actually what you're going to see. Now, what I can say is that some of the investigations of electron-electron interactions for low energies actually suggested pneumatic phase, which as far as Hamiltonian is concerned, exactly has exactly the same form. And one of the possibilities is that strain in some form, for example, encourages this pneumatic phase. So even if strain itself is not big enough to give values I was talking about, maybe those two are important together. So actually, calculation that was done on this time binding, which is also in the paper, suggested that this value would be increased if there was some initial strain and then interactions added on top, that this estimate would actually increase for 1%.
So what's the estimate of the disorder scale, and would you see any of this, or would it be smeared by disorder completely? Like, do you see one MeV in disorder scale?
Well,
the samples.
Well, the experiment done in Manchester, whatever results they get in at whatever values, I did not actually see error bars. But yeah, they see values, measurements done to very low magnetic fields, exactly above, to talk about activation gaps. So I can only remember their estimates for mobility taken out from magnetic field, but you would have to look for estimates. Of...
So there are no more questions.
You can introduce yourself, meanwhile.
I think we've... So my name is Yafit Barlas. I'm from UC Riverside, or now at UC Riverside. So this work started when I was in the magnet lab. What I'm going to look at is the effect of interactions on the n equals 0 Landau level in ABC. Stacked trilayer graphene. So this work was done with collaboration with René Coche and his student
Maxime. So let me just first state the problem that I'm interested in. And so, for the moment, I'm not going to draw a two-dimensional version. I'm just going to draw a three-dimensional version of ABC stacked trilayer graphene, which in ABC stacked trilayer graphene, you have three sheets, three graphene honeycomb lattices, and the middle layer always has the stacking of the other layer. So both of these are stacked atoms. Both of the atoms, carbon atoms in this layer, are stacked on top, and that just leaves these two that are unstacked. And this still has the C3V symmetry. So let me call this A1, B1, A2. And there is direct interlayer hopping, which is a large energy scale, which is of gamma 1, which is about 0.4 eV. And if one figures. So it turns out that this hopping moves these bands over to high energies. And so what we end up having is only these sites are low energy sites. So effectively what I've done is I've taken the trilayer and integrated out the middle layer and mapped it into a two-layer problem. Okay? And the interesting thing about the band structure is that this low energy site in the bottom layer can only talk to the low energy site in the top layer by hopping through these dimer bands. It has to hop three times because it hops in plane, and because of that, you get an effective Hamiltonian, which is because it's talking diagonally through these terms. And because it's three hopping, so it's 5 to the 3, and this connects the A1 with B3, for example. And I can, I know this term is going to come third order in perturbation theory, so I can also put a coefficient.
Could on this. One more question, why is it third order?
Excuse me?
Why is it third order?
Yeah, because this forms a dimer band, this forms a dimer band. It has to hop here, hop through here, and hop through here in plane. And so there are three hops that are involved. And that's why it's π/3.
Okay.
Right. And because if you look at it from the top, this still has the honeycomb lattice structure, so it has this rotational symmetry of the usual lattice. Okay, so there are other obviously terms that are included in here, which could come due to remote hoppings. Let's say direct hopping from this to this, which is gamma 4, and then there's a lot of other terms that are there. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to put them in H-rest for the moment. These are the remote hopping terms, and for the moment, what I'm going to be looking at, it in B field, and any of these terms in a large B field are not going to matter too much. Okay. Okay. So, what is the Landau level spectrum in a magnetic field? And so, interestingly enough, if I just, let's say for the moment, just keep this term and plot the Landau level spectrum, this should be actually here. But from here, I can tell right away that the energy should go like β/3/2. So the level spacing should be proportional to β/3/2. Also, from this, I can also figure out what the degeneracy is going to be. And this is the interesting part. So we already have the valley and the spin degeneracy. So and in this system, at least in the lowest Landau level, layer is the same as valley. So these will be fourfold degenerate. And that's just because of I have two spin labels and two valley labels. But the n equals 0 Landau level will actually be 12-fold degenerate. And the 12-fold degeneracy is coming from the fact that I have 2 for valley, 2 for spin, and 3 due to Landau level orbital degeneracy. And this is a unique feature for this type of stacking, is that if I write it in terms of annihilation operators, I have in the lowest Landau level, I can annihilate the n equals 0, n equals 1, and n equals 2 Landau levels. So there are 3 orbital degeneracies that are considered that are degenerate at this point. Okay. And
what is the symmetry that gives you this extra degeneracy?
What do you mean? So it's just this, the fact that you have a Betti phase of 3 pi.
it's accidental.
It's topology.
It's just topology. It's very favorable.
No, it is accidental because you forbid most of the hooking terms.
It's accidental because if you look very, very far away from it,
you will lift as degeneracy.
Yeah, but if you look very far from it, let's say in momentum space, I'll still encode 3π, right? For example, in that problem, if the very phase doesn't change locally, it does change, but. So, okay.
There is a following thing that you neglected, which is just diagonal quadratic terms.
Yeah, I've neglected those.
Holdogenous. Which lives electron holdogenous.
Yeah, which lives electron holdogenous, yeah.
Then, if you include any other term in the lower order, then P squared, this.
Yeah, I'm gonna put those terms in later.
The degeneracy of the Mandel level straight away.
Yes.
And
Berry
phase is not going to help you.
Berry phase doesn't help me that case, yes. But at this model level, okay, you can say accidental. Okay. All right, so I have a 12-fold degenerate Landau level, and I'm gonna try to understand what happens when I have interactions within these Landau levels. And part of the reason that that I looked at this problem is because of what we know in gallium arsenide. We know in gallium arsenide that n equals one Landau level, you have a quantum Hall liquid. N equals to 2, it's n equals 1, it's weak, but when you go to n equals to 2 at fractional filling, you always end up having bubble phases or charge density wave phases. Liquid isn't stable. And so the question was, now I have three orbitals that are degenerate. And so there's some microscopic dependence of the interaction on the Hamiltonian Hamiltonian on these wave functions and the form factors of these wave functions, and is there something interesting that can happen in this scenario? And it turns out that it does. So the question is, how do these levels split up, and then what ordering is there once interactions are taken into account? Okay. So initially, to address this problem, we looked at mean field states. So we assume translational invariance, and we look for quantum Hall liquid type states, and the filling pattern. So let me just say that the quantization here is -6 to +6. And this is going to be 10 minus 10. And so the question is, between -6 and 6, I expect -5, -4, -3, and all these. And what is the exact ordering of these? And what is the strength of these plateaus that will appear once the sample becomes clean enough and interactions are acting? Okay, and so let me first tell you the mean field results. And I'm going to assume translation invariance. And the model that I'm going to address, I'm going to add a Valli-Zeeman term, which is a bare Valli-Zeeman term, a spin-Zeeman term, which is also bare, and a Landau level splitting, which I assume to be symmetric between 0 and 1 and 1 and 0. And these are just bare terms, and presumably when interactions are taken into account, they should be exchange enhanced. Now, any interaction effects will be proportional to E squared epsilon LB. That's the only scale in the problem. And because the level spacing goes as 3/2, it's a good approximation to just project everything into this lowest Landau level.
This number just scale bonds and comparisons on all
spacing. Which Landau level spacing? This Landau level spacing?
Oh,
yeah, it's b to the 3/2.
So what are the scales?
It's a much larger number because it's b cube over gamma one. So the point is that at some b fields, this spacing is going to be much larger than this, right? And at that value,
this is square root of b.
Yeah. So I can just work within this subspace because interactions cannot make transitions from here to here. That's the point. Yes, I'm considering the limit of magnetic field where the Landau level spacing is much larger than interaction spacing. Yes, strong magnetic field.
What
would
say at 1 Tesla?
Do you know how big? Yeah, probably not at 1 Tesla. I would say around 10 Tesla or something like that. So I don't remember the number off the top of my head. 10 Tesla. What is it? Oh, no, I don't know. I don't,
What is
10 Tesla, what is 10 Tesla? Interaction energy is 2010.4, root B, something like that. I think so.
So that's the scale when they become comparable, right?
Oh, no. I'm not saying that. I don't know. I can check that. But I assume that around 10 Tesla, this effect of the other Landau level is going to be washed out. So I think it will probably, in single-layer graphene, I think it, in bilayer graphene, it happens at 3 or 4 Tesla, right?
But in bilayer graphene, the Landau levels at higher energy are almost equidistant.
Yeah, but here it's even faster. They go even faster, right? In bilayer, they go like b. Here it's going like b to the 3/2. So
this is the same scale. You compare b to gamma 1. You compare magnetic field to gamma 1.
No. I'm comparing the scaling of this term. I'm comparing the scaling of this term with respect to the scaling of this term. And the question is, what goes outside it? You know? And I'm afraid I don't remember the number.
I think it depends on epsilon is large.
If epsilon large, but there's always renormalization when you have electron-electron interactions. So that number, you know, I know from experience that in quantum Hall, that number is not going to be large enough.
Actually, for this model, epsilon diverges because the Fermi Thomas.
Yes.
So epsilon can be very large.
Okay. All right, so these are the bare interaction, bare splittings, which can come from, say, applying a Zeeman or due to Zeeman field or external potential difference between the layer. And this small splitting between 0 and 1 can come from remote hopping terms or even potential difference that you can apply between the layers. But this is small, normally. Okay, and that's what's included in this equation. So the results are that you start from -6 to 6, and the first that breaks and then it And then you get the orbital splitting. And so this within the model used, this has been polarized. This is because valley is the same thing as layer. With some phase coherence between the valleys. Now this system will look like an exciton condensate at these filling factors, but I only say that my statement is only true order of D over LB, because the distance between the layers is really small. So any small terms can switch this polarization sequence. So you can polarize valley first or layer second. Okay, but what I'm going to be interested in is the Landau level splitting. And due to interactions, what happens is that this sequence is always valid. N equals 0, N equals 1, N equals 2, 3. And the reason is, at least in the translationally invariant case, the reason is that because the wave function is more localized in n equals 1 Landau level, it has better exchange energy.
Should 3? Do you really mean 3 or 2?
0, 2. Okay. Sorry, thank you for pointing that. And so this is somewhat similar to what the situation that happens in graphene. And so then the question is, what happens due to this fluctuations of this orbital pseudospin? And it turns out that the quantum Hall liquid is not always stable. So what I've done is mean field calculation. And the mean field calculation has assumed translation invariance. Now, in order to look for the stability of this state, I calculate the fluctuations about this mean field state.
The mean field means, so you
Hartree Fock
interaction first, include magnetic field, and then.
Excuse me? No. The mean field means Hartree Fock. So I have turned on interactions, but it's Hartree Fock mean field theory.
Interactions after you turn the magnetic field?
After I get the Landau levels away, far away, mm-hmm. I turn on interactions within the 12-fold degenerate Landau level.
And you assume integer filling or
yeah, I assume integer filling. I'm assuming integer filling.
So there's no screening here? Is the Hartree Fock with the bare?
Yeah, it's just bare. You don't need screening. You have this e to the negative q squared behavior that just kind of kills it.
So you consider just this splitting of this three.
Right, now I'm going to consider splitting of the three.
So the fact that there's order 0, 1, 2, and then 1, 0, 2 is. Is what you mean, yeah?
So exchange is always better in n equals 0 because the wave function is smaller, right? So I apologize. Okay. So then the question is, I know that here I have broken symmetries, I have Goldstone modes, and things are stable. What happens when I have this extra degeneracy included in the problem? And so the question is, if I calculate the fluctuations about some mean field state in this case, is the quantum Hall liquid stable? And it turns out that it's not.
What field factor you're talking about?
I'm looking right now, for this calculation, I'm only looking at minus 5, or if you assume SU4 symmetry, minus 4 or any of the others. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at a model problem where I have only three Landau levels, 0, 1, and 2, and I fill n equals 0 completely, and I calculate fluctuations about that.
What SU4 symmetry
means? Oh, SU4 in the valley symmetry.
But the interaction does not preserve.
I'm going to set d equals to 0 after that. So interaction didn't preserve it, but d over lb is really small, right, in the system. So approximately, I'm OK to assume SU4 interactions. OK? I mean, I really have to go to very, very large fields to really break this. So I mean, I'm doing it to make my life simple, because I don't want to calculate things in 12 levels. Okay, so what I did is just calculate the collective mode dispersion about some state where I kill everything and n equals 1, and if I make a perturbation here, it distributes here somehow. And so what are the collective mode branches of this excitation? And the result, it turns out that it's unstable.
You, what are the pseudo potentials?
Pseudo potentials are VQ multiplied by some Laguerre polynomial. So
what the values are for different combinations of quantum numbers?
Excuse me?
What are the values for different combinations of ends?
Okay. So I mean, pseudo potentials are, it's not just simple, right? Because I have 81 pseudo potentials, right? Because I have 3 to the n, right? In bilayer, you have 2 to the n, 2 to the 4, and here I have 3 to the 4, so I have 81. So there's a lot of them.
So are some of them terribly negative?
No, there's some symmetries. So they're all positive, but there's some symmetries. Because the interaction within a projected Landau level, I mean, there are people here who know this very well, right? Is something like this.
Oh, but your states are constrained to sublevels.
Yes, but
so
within
you when you do the Hartree Fock calculation, you can.
No, I allow 0, 1, and 2 Landau level.
Okay.
I allow all of these. These are all allowed. The higher orbitals, higher than 2, are excluded in the calculation.
Okay.
But 0, 1, and 2 are degenerate, and they are allowed to in the calculation. Otherwise, you wouldn't get anything interesting. Right? So you have these type of pseudo potentials, and there are terms that, you know, you can lower the energy in higher Landau levels by forming some charge density wave, because exchange is not the only thing, and you have some, because of the wave function nodes, you have some points where you can make energy some fluctuation. So this is kind of a spin wave calculation where I assume that I have s equals 1 spin full, and then I excite to these other spins. And I can do this in linear spin wave theory by writing some spin coherent path integral and then calculate the fluctuations. I get 2 branches of modes. And so, and one of the branch does this. The other branch is finite. So I can neglect it. But as you see right away, I see that there is an imaginary component to my energies. So the fluctuations are growing large. So this is probably not my ground state, because my fluctuations grow in time. And from this, we can expand the energy dispersion of this mode, for the phase of this mode. And I can write, and it turns out that this instability is coming from the charge fluctuations. So in this Landau level, I have phase and charge, and they're canonically conjugate, but the instability is dominated by the phase fluctuation. So if I write the energy around, expand this energy functional about this instability, which is Q will be about 2.4, I get something like a Brzozowski model. Well, let me just write it this way. Doesn't matter. So I get something like this. If I expand about this Q naught is Q, yes.
This part where it gets negative, where you have the minimum and the,
mm-hmm.
it really corresponds also to the first zero of your Laguerre polynomial for n equal to 2.
It's the same value, right?
Yeah, yeah. So or close to it. It's not, I mean, I think it's like 2.37 or something.
Is it correct to say that your effect is built on n equal to 0 and n equal to 1? N equal to 2, n equal to 1 was passive.
Yeah, n equals to 1 is also acting, right? It's at 4 by 4. That's why I have two modes. Otherwise, I would have only one mode. I'm exciting to both of them, and it's some linear combination of these modes that these branches are.
If you say instability, why then somehow means that the main field was
yes,
detected, so
yes,
a different
yes.
state.
Well, you have to relax transition invariance, it turns out.
Right. You consider other trial states which
right. Yeah, we did. So I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you about
before that. I mean, this is. I would say.
No, I do it after this. I'm not smart enough, so I have to figure out what transition invariant states to look for. And initially I thought it would be a striped state, but
yes,
that doesn't work out. And the reason that it doesn't work out is because you have three levels. So you have third order term. So the third order term in the density preempts this transition, and you actually have a first order transition before you have the first order phase transition, stripe transition. So it turns out that because of this, you have something like, if I write it Q1 delta rho Q2 delta rho Q3 and Q1 plus Q2, I have this delta function. And so this always will support triangular or hexagonal charge density wave type state. So once we had that, and we knew what to look for, then we did the numerics, and we find actually, and this is, I guess, the upshot, is that, let me just plot here, that I can now use this bare splitting, and I can pull the lambda levels away, and I know that at some value, the liquid is going to be stable, right? So we find that at this, is a quantum Hall liquid is stable, and here it's a triangular charge density wave. And this is interesting because it's at integer filling.
What do you mean by numerics?
Hartree-Fock, assuming, doing Hartree-Fock, but losing the fact of transition invariance. So I allow modulation now.
Hartree-Fock in how big Hilbert space? What is your Hilbert space in which you
have? Hilbert space, I mean, Hartree-Fock is you write it as a two-body Hamiltonian, right?
Sure.
So the Hilbert space, I didn't do the numerics, so I can check that. I predicted that there should be something like this, but my Rene Coche, who's an expert in this, did the numerics. So, but it's large enough, and he does get convergence and everything.
Physically, what states do you include?
All three.
Only the.
Yeah. Well, we've done other numerics. We're also included valley. So
right.
We've included up to this point.
Yes.
And there is a valley density wave that becomes a, as you change the lambda level, it just right. All goes in one layer or the other layer. So, but that's not that interesting, I guess.
Okay.
Yes.
So, question is, why don't you include all the? I mean, I know this is complicated.
No, you're absolutely right.
There's no
so
control parameter.
So it's that's further. You know, that's work. That's one thing at a time, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's in progress.
Okay.
So you're saying that you have integer filling.
I have integer filling. Yes. And
what is liquid?
Quantum Hall liquid is just
compressible.
It's incompressible.
Oh, it's incompressible.
It's incompressible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you call it liquid.
Yeah, I go from incompressible to compressible state, which is a because this charge density wave will be pinned by disorder, I will not have a plateau, and so the So the filling will look like minus five, but the quantization will be of minus six, as you're in this. So this should be, you know, if this is true, then it should be a very clear signature in experiments. Yes.
I'm just a little bit wondering when you have now a triangular charge density wave. Mm-hmm. Just because you see the instability, first of all, does not mean that all electrons take part in this formation of the triangular charge density wave.
Yeah.
Do you have something like that there's some sort of homogeneous background? And on top of that, you have...
No, you have actually... Yeah, so you have some sort of variation. So what really is happening is that electron doesn't live in just one layer, it forms a coherent superposition of 0, 1, and 2.
Yeah.
And because the wave functions are different, you do this calculation in, say, guiding center, and then when you put the wave functions in, you get an actual charge density modulation. And that follows the pattern of, so the total filling of that charge density wave is, total filling is 1, in this language. So there's a minima, and that's, you can think of that minima as some background, you know.
The question then would be, do you have local filling factors where you have your bump in the density?
Yeah.
Is beyond 1?
Yeah, so I don't know if I would like to think of it that way, because the electrons always never one in any of the Landau levels. It's always distributed at a fraction in all of the Landau levels. And so if I define the filling factor sigma, it varies as a function of, say, guiding center or position along the thing, and it never goes to 1.
But its
square sum is always 1.
I understand that point.
Yeah.
But the only question that I have that is rather fundamental is, you have these dips.
Mm-hmm.
Your wave function overlaps only in n equal to 1 and n equal to 2. And n equal to 2 is...
N equals 0 also overlaps. There's a little bit of it in n equals 0, all
so
three of them.
Then you just have the Gaussian, you don't have a...
Yeah. But you still have some profile that's there, right? So you can think of that as the background profile, let's say. But there's always some profile.
Yeah, you have a tendency to form these charge density waves only in one or two components out of three.
Yeah.
What you say is that this is sufficient...
If the Landau levels are sufficiently close together, if you put n equals to 2 on top, then you lose that ability. And part of it is the same argument that comes from gallium arsenide is, you know, somehow in 0 and 1, things don't work well for Hartree-Fock, but when you go to n equals to 2, Hartree-Fock wins out always. And part of it is because of this nodes that you develop in the potential. At these points, and that's the same, similar physics happening, but also you can form coherent superpositions of Landau levels. You're not just restricted to one Landau level, right? It's sort of the opposite limit calculation of what Misha Fogler did, right?
So this delta where does it come from?
It can come from potential difference between the layers. It can also be induced by gamma 4. Yeah?
No.
If you apply potential difference between the layers, delta L, yeah, Landau level splitting gets opened by
this 0, 1.
In bilayer, it opens up, right? Yeah? In bilayers, it opens up. If you go beyond second order perturbation theory,
No.
In bilayers, what happens is if you start inducing it in K valley, 0 does this, and in K prime valley, it does this. There's always Landau level splitting, because in bilayer, what happens is, if you go beyond perturbation theory, what happens is you get a you get these terms, and they open up a gap. This is because when you break this inversion symmetry, if you do this term, there's a gap that opens up.
So for n equal 0 and 1, if you have that...
it's very small. This value is proportional to delta V.
You have this diagonal, yeah, in the vector space.
No, layer. Layer is value here, the lowest line.
Same n equals 0 and 1, they have different energies. If
delta V...
In the same way, do they have different
Yes.
Zero.
Yes. If delta V is not equal to 0. This is his paper's result, right? So I only verify. When you apply a potential difference in bilayer, you open a small gap between 0 and 1. Yeah. And it's sign changes if you change the value. That's in the original bilayer paper, right? So same thing could happens in the trilayer. Also, there's this gamma 4 term which also opens up a gap. The gamma 4 is this hopping that goes from unstacked to stacked, and that also opens a gap. So there's a competition of, you know, it's not just delta V that you can control it, but.
Okay, and this is extra to the anisotropy of the Coulomb interactions in the 0, 1, 2 space.
Yeah. That's the bare term that I'm putting by hand. So,
but the anisotropy of the actual interactions.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, of course. Otherwise, I wouldn't get anything.
So let me understand.
Yes.
So there's a predetermined levels, right? What's the state, the final state of your? It's a superposition. You form some superposition, right?
I found some superposition of the Landau level indices.
Okay.
And that superposition varies as a function of the guiding center.
So this superposition has three coefficients.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what's happening? I don't know, maybe it's from the well of some kind of spin or something.
Yeah, that's what I did.
What does it
mean? Actually, it's very interesting. So there are certain topological properties. I believe it's like a CP2 skirmion. So one of the things that we plot in the paper, I could show you the picture, is when you mix in these Landau levels, 0 and 1, you obviously get some dipole, because one is even and one is odd. So you get some dipoles. And so there's a finite density of dipoles that actually have a winding of 2 pi if you look at the center of this triangular wave density pattern. And this winding corresponds to some topological properties, which we haven't as yet characterized.
On a simple level, so we have this superposition of some coefficient A, B,
yeah.
And at one point of space, it has one value, and when you move,
it has one value, it has triangular pattern.
So what does it do? I mean, how does it change?
You can think of it, if you think of it as, say, spin, it's some spin that then rotates out of the plane and then comes back out.
After one period.
Yeah. But it's a very, you know, it's like a skirmion.
Okay.
You know, but it's a very small skirmion, because the lattice spacing for this charge density wave is of the magnetic length, and so it's very hard to characterize from a continuum model skirmions of such small scale. So that's one of the problems that we've been having, is to calculate some sort of a Pythagorean index to properly characterize something, some topological charge that could characterize something like this. But we haven't figured that out.
And if I do it in bilayer?
Nothing happens in bilayer, incidentally. Everything is stable. You can engineer scenarios where if you apply enough potential difference, n equals to 1 moves below n equals to 0 in bilayer, if you apply potential in one of the valleys, and then you can have these type of patterns, or you can have, I did some work with Alan McDonald and René Coté, where we found some spiral Dojilinsky-Moria type interactions. So there it's easier, because you can think of two-level systems. Here this is the three-level system, so it's not that easy. But in bilayer, at least at near degeneracy, and as long as the splitting is positive, nothing happens. It's somehow when you bring in the n equals to 2 on top of it, somehow these, you know, which is kind of complementary with gallium arsenide, where you see bubble phases and stipe phases. And
minus 3, 0, and plus 3 field factors. Do you have anything?
Yeah, so, you know, again, I'm assuming valley and spin are polarized, so we haven't done the calculation with everything in there, but presumably you should.
But, so you should.
Well, I mean, the calculation that I believe so. What I've done is I've assumed that spin and valley are polarized in my calculation. And so you can just apply that result willy-nilly to everything. You're right, like he pointed out, that you have to do the full calculation to really see if this works, but we haven't finished that yet. It's not that easy to do. 12 levels is hard.
Any more questions?
Can you see again? So what is the Schumann's experimental modification?
So the experimental result would be, let's say if I could control delta Landau level splitting by applying potential difference between the layers, if I'm in that regime, I would see quantization at minus 5. I would see a plateau at minus 5. Then as I tune below this critical value, my filling factor would still correspond to minus 5, but the plateau would be at minus 6. So without changing the density or B field, I can have a transition.
No, I mean,
Because the Landau levels that are below will always contribute. No, but the Landau levels that are below will always contribute the minus 6. And the topmost level will become compressible, so that will not contribute. But the minus 6 will still be there. That's what happens in gallium arsenide. So does that answer?
Why will not contribute?
No. The topmost will not contribute because charge density disorder will pin the charge density wave. It has to slide to contribute. So that topmost Landau level will get pinned. It will look like it will be compressible. But the minus 6 from the Landau levels below will still be there. So that should. You should, in a clean enough system, again, this is clean enough system, but enough disorder to pin the charge density wave, which you always have, you should get this scenario.
I mean, you could, in principle, since you have a triple layer, you could think of looking, if you have inhomogeneous charge distributions, or bubble phases, or whatever it is, you could look with STM on it. And you should see
that's certainly true. I mean, you can image it, you can do other things, but you know, there should be a signal in transport already. So if there's not a signal in transport, then
since you have 6, but then if you change, I don't know, magnetic field, so do you have at all the plateau of this 5-4s?
Right. So let me just say it. So what happens is that if I dial this down, right, I have, let's say, minus 5 plateau, and when I get to this critical value, right, I'm not changing my B field. All I'm changing is this splitting, if you allow me to change it.
Yeah, but now if you are in the situation where to the left of this delta,
yeah, so this is
now we'll change the magnetic field or
no, but that's the
or concentration.
No, it won't.
You
won't
have all plateaus.
You will not change any concentration. You will not change anything. You will just change the splitting between the Landau levels.
No, but am I allowed to ask a question? If you're at this point and now you. If I want to change magnetic field or concentration.
Oh, yeah, you can change the magnetic field.
Yes.
And you would probably see a.
All plateaus.
Yeah, all plateaus. If you change it. So that's.
I mean, you completely changed the ground state.
Yeah, I mean.
This ground state, if it exists, this state, as a charge density wave, it only exists probably in a certain filling factor range.
Yeah.
So now what you do is, when you change the magnetic field or the filling,
you go to another state, doesn't mean that that the state remains the same. It's an end particle state.
So it would be look like a reentrant quantum Hall phase.
Minus six wouldn't be at least a small plateau at this point.
Oh yeah. So if the minus six is there, and then you start dialing the B field, you would see a reentrant quantum Hall phase.
So as a quantum, you will return to minus five.
Minus six, because you're changing the B field now.
No, if you change the B field from minus infinity to plus infinity, what will be the sequence of quantums?
Okay, well, I mean that's not. I'm just saying that.
Just 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, so all I'm saying is, I change this in a particular pattern. I change this splitting first, and then when I'm here, then I change the density of the B field.
Yes.
Then it will look like a reentrant. That was his question, right?
So reentrant means what? That you
minus six, minus six, insulating minus six. Because you're changing the filling factor.
Insulating? So what does insulating mean?
Okay, so.
Any quantum. So what does insulating mean? So what is quantum Hall?
I mean, you would see just integer going to another integer, and then whatever you see in the middle. I can't tell what you see in the middle without really making some assumption, right?
What is the sequence of integers?
Six, six,
six,
six,
six,
six, six, six, six, six, six, six.
Those, what he's saying is trying to say is that between sixes you will have
what?
You will have a conductor, a sigma xx sigma parallel, not equal to zero.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. That's what I'm calling it. I'm not sure if that's the right word to call it a reentrant phase, but you know, you would not be at the same filling factor. You would change the filling factor, so you wouldn't have the.
I understood that you have an immediate jump from minus six to plus six.
Oh no, it goes through zero.
It's the most radical zero.
Oh no, because the minus three and the zero and three, they don't have they're quantum Hall liquid states, right? They don't have the Landau level orbital degree of freedom active.
Will it jump in units of freedom or like as well as
if you were sitting inside below this point. And then it would jump in units of three, and you wouldn't see.
As though quantum Hall is not a result.
Exactly. So you have to have control so that wouldn't be enough. That's why I say that you have to have control to see minus five, and then if you change some parameter, if the minus five disappears, this would be the sort of the smoking gun. Just seeing. 6 minus 3, minus 6, minus 3, 0, and 3. Like you said, it's just good. Somebody could argue you don't have clean enough sample and you haven't resolved the Landau level. Yes?
The last time, the same question.
Yeah.
If you are to the right from this point, if you have a large splitting and you change the concentration, you have minus 6, minus 5, minus 4, minus 3.
Yes.
Now you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Then it's
minus 6, minus 3, 0, 3, 6.
Sorry?
Okay. Now I understand your question.
Minus 4, minus 3.
I understand your question.
I understand.
So I now understand the question. Yes. So you would have.